How did Rorona decorate her Christmas tree? She used some garland from Arland. What is Totori's favorite kind of music? Heavy metal.
How does Maruru store her water? Barrel! What does Lulu's dog say? Edward. Wrong alchemist, Kel.
Oh, right.
So no one said all games were gonna be this way. Backlogs a joke, a choke, gamer cards at my hay. It's like you always play 2 years behind. When you really need a boost to heart, to health, or even your mind. No, Kel will be there for you.
She'll say games that are so.
Matt will be there for you.
When you're feeling that you're stuck,
we'll be there for you.
Cause we've all been there too.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and we are your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the Sturkenberg to my Rorona, Mr. Matt Mason.
Hey, I'm here. I think I'll be here also for your adopted daughter, too. You know, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
We've speculated for months who the baby daddy was for Rorona's daughter, and I haven't played that game, so I guess she's adopted?
She's adopted.
That voice you heard was Sam Walker.
I just want Rorona and Sturk to fuck. And they don't let me have that. This series is really, really cruel for characters getting full makey outies. Gaijin and I have openly been yelling at, like, Atelier Ryza for 3 whole games because Ryza and Claudia don't kiss.
That's next show, Sam.
Yeah, but Sturkenberg and Rorona also don't kiss, and it is a problem.
Also joining me, I don't know if he's complaining about kissing, Josh Carpenter.
Well, not about that, but Sam, can I offer you some tentacles? We have some tentacles in Totori. Would that work for you?
I don't like the tentacle monster in Totori. He comes back in Lulua.
No. And if you can't tell, we are talking about the Atelier, I guess the Arland trilogy is what you would call it.
They are quartet now.
Quartet, sorry. Quartet.
They are four.
I keep forgetting about that fourth game because it came out of nowhere.
You know, it's a game nobody asked for, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I was going to play it, and then you were like, no, play Ryza, because you have people to talk about Lulua. But we need more people that have played Ryza. And I was like, okay, so I played Ryza. But I did play the other three Arland games way back in the day on the PS3.
Samesies!
I played both PS3 and Vita versions.
Oh, you got me.
I double dipped.
Yeah, that was back when I was hardcore, no physical, no buy back then. And I kind of regret it. But I also didn't know that... according to eBay, it was the Dusk games that came out physically for Vita here. They weren't widely printed, so I never got my hands on them, and I kind of regret it now.
Those are the ones that are very expensive now.
Yeah, they're a bit pricey. people are selling the boxes to those for like $50 on eBay.
Oh, good Lord.
Jeez.
I hate those people.
I do too. It does make me curious how much my PS3 collector's editions would go for, because I have all three of them. Not that I would want to get rid of them anytime soon. One of them came with a Barrel t-shirt.
Cute!
Way too small for me, but it's cute.
Look, nobody gets it right with booby gamers, okay? Everybody thinks that everyone has a pencil chest because Japan. And then you look at, like, actual people who live in North America and you're like, most of us are not that stick straight.
Yeah, I learned the hard way when I was in Japan and bought a Dragon Quest t-shirt that a Japanese XXX or XX is not the same as an American XX.
No, I didn't even try to buy clothes when I was in Japan because, you know, when you have 42 double Gs, nothing fits you in Japan.
Nope. But at least these games fit perfectly.
Yeah.
This series started my love for the Atelier games.
Same,
yeah.
I'll tell you what, why don't we take a brief musical interlude, play some of the gorgeous music from these games, and then we'll come back and just dive right in. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about the Atelier Arlen Quadrilogy. Quad? What do you call a four thing?
Quartet.
Thing? Quartet. Okay. Quartet. A four thing thing. I am good with words. I have been busy as hell this week. So we've got Atelier Rorona, originally released on June 25th, 2009. And then Atelier Totori. Oh, I'm not saying the subtitles either.
That's
Rorona, the Alchemist of Arlen, and then Atelier Totori, the Adventurer of Arlen, June 24th, 2010. And then Maruru was that the princess or the apprentice?
The apprentice.
The Apprentice of Arlen on June 25th, 2011. And then almost about 8 years later, we get Atelier Lubowa. What was the subtitle for that one?
The Scion.
The Scion of Arlen. And that one came out on PS4, Switch, and Windows. Now, all of the previous games had release dates for Vita and Switch and Windows and a whole bunch of other systems, but I didn't want to be sitting here reading release dates all night.
That is fair.
Plus, I think most of us did play the... Well, Josh, you played some of them on Vita.
I played Rorona, Totori, and Maruru on Vita.
Okay.
There gotcha. You go.
I played them on both, PS3 and Vita.
And I was saying before the break, this was my introduction to Atelier, but I was wrong because I had played Iris on the PS2 a couple of years before playing Rorona. But this is what kind of sparked my love for the Atelier series, because Iris was kind of a weird game, if you ask me. It didn't focus nearly on as much of the crafting as these ones did. And from what I read, the Atelier was kind of in a weird place before R1 came out, because Marie and Grammond did okay. I mean, did pretty great. And then the Iris trilogy was kind of meh. They released the two Mana Kamiya games, and those didn't do very well. And then after Arlen, the series became a yearly series.
It's the juggernaut we now have
of
ultra girly games for everybody.
And I've also heard that the original Atelier is the reason why most Japanese RPGs have some sort of crafting system now.
that'd make a lot of sense, I feel. Like,
yeah.
It's evolved so much from Marie's humble beginnings. And yeah. Atelier Rorona. So I actually started with Annie. Annie was the first game I got to review for the site in the series. And it was because I was very fortunate to do a Run to the Sun event with RP Gamer. We went to NIS America, and they gave me the review copy of Annie, and it was in like a hard cartridge. So it was really neat. Like it was a bug cartridge, so that like if I needed to, you know, if I got stuck or whatever, I could cheat. But one of the games they showed us was Rorona. And I got to play it well before they had even really localized much of it. And I remember being super in love with it. I love the fact that it was pastel colors. I love the fact that we had a really dippy heroine. My love for this series truly came from Rorona, I would say, more than Annie. Annie was fun, but it definitely had the trappings of the older games, whereas Rorona was very clearly something that was new and it was different, especially given there was more activeness in the battles, you know, and had beautiful 3D graphics, considering most of the games in this series prior were sprite.
Yeah, this was the first, Rorona was the first one that had 3D models rather than sprites.
Yeah. And I mean, the models were not like when you look at the 3D now, you know, it's not that impressive. Everybody was kind of super deformed looking. They had scrunchy faces.
They kind of glide across the environment rather than really walking.
Yeah. But I loved it. I loved every second of it. And I had the pleasure of reviewing Rorona on PS3 when it came out for the site. And I loved it. I loved the fact that just the characters are so carefree. And that is kind of unheard of in JRPGs. You know, it's a slice of life story. It's about a girl who, you know, has a time limit imposed on her because she needs to get her alchemy license. That easy. And it's just cutesy, fun, wholesome nonsense.
It's so low stakes because so many games you play, you know, it's you saving the world from the big bad evil. And this is very much just like you got to keep your shop open because your boss, your mentor has basically been lazy and gotten a terrible reputation in town. And now they want to shut it down.
Because Astrid's the worst. Astrid, you know what? Astrid should be in jail. That's how I felt. And I still feel now. Especially with how she treated Rorona a couple times. I'm just like, girl.
And yeah, I think I had been playing Tales of Vesperia before this game. So, you know, really kind of political drama, hardcore JRPG. And going to a more low-stakes JRPG that was just about making stuff and making friends felt like a breath of fresh air to me back then. It was so nice to be able to sit down and just craft and make stuff and try to, you know, manage the time, because, my God, the time limits in some of the early games were brutal.
Well, Rorona had the worst one of all the games we're going to talk about, and that's just because it was the strictest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was very... One of the downsides of Rorona having the strictest time limit was also it was very easy to screw up. You know, and...
Yeah.
It's... I will defend the time limits and the fact that it keeps you focused on what you need to be doing. It does suck that you can kind of like, it is totally possible to get a, you know, to basically lose the game by screwing up the time limits. But it does keep you focused on not going off and doing 12 different things. Like, you are very focused. You've got to do this next thing. You got to build, you know, whatever it may be, 12 bombs, really good quality bombs. And it's like, okay, well, I got to go. I got to get the items that I need. I got to explore this area. And so that I can build these bombs and get it done by the date. And I'm not going to get, you know, not going to get sidetracked by exploring new areas or doing side quests or anything like that. No. I'm just going to focus on this, get this done first. And then if I got extra time, then I can spend that on other things.
I'll defend that too, Josh, because the playing, was it Esha and Logie, this Christmas time that had hard time limits. And I'm not out to 100% these games at all. I just would like to get through the story and, you know, do the side quests that naturally come about. And it did keep me from doing, like, you know, because I really enjoyed it. So as an enjoyable part of it, I was like, okay, I'm not trying to 100% it. I am enjoying this. That did keep me from spending way too far on stuff and maybe getting burnt out, which, you know, I can see that because now that I the only one of these four I played was Alua, and it doesn't have time limit. And I did start to feel that drag a little bit because I wasn't progressing. I was like wasting too much time on like this one ingredient for one little side quest. So yeah. I'll defend it too.
I think that's almost part of the idea with Rorona, because it's not a very long game. I mean, it's like 20 hours or even less.
It's short.
And it has a ton of different I think it's like a dozen different endings you can get, different character endings, different, you know, true ending, normal ending, bad ending. And so it's very much set up with replayability in mind. And with it being so short with those time limits, like it's something that really is set up to just come back and maybe play it again a few years later and see different, see the different events and see the different endings that you didn't get the first time.
And I do like that element a lot. I think my beef is just, especially when you get to Totori and Meruru, which still also have time limits, there is something super restrictive in Rorona, even compared to those two.
And Rorona was hard. It was like every 3 months you had to have something done, basically. Yes. Okay.
And it was easy to mess up. It really was, because of how rigid the time frame is, it was very easy to just kind of get lost into, I want to make the perfect version of X, but then you neglect like having relationships with people or going out and gathering, and finding that perfect balance, at least in the original version of Rorona. I can't speak for the one that came afterwards that they did for PS4 and Vita. You kind of get hardlined into the task. Whereas when you move to Totori also had a strict time frame, but it was more strict because it was one major goal instead of multiple little goals. And then I feel like Meruru was really good about kind of being a balance of both. Like you had smaller goals that you had to work through for one big overarching goal, right? Rorona kind of just has you doing all these tasks. And it's great, but it's like there is a little bit of monotony there as well, because it's just not, I found personally, like thinking back to it, I don't know if I necessarily loved the hyper restrictiveness of it, but I also agree with the issue that comes with Lulua, which is you have almost too much freedom. And it's funny because I think the series has struggled to find that perfect balance again. And that's where like, I tend to be like, you know what, this is why I like the desk games the best. And it's just because those ones kind of give you a good sense of, they want you to meddle with some of the smaller stuff. They want you to obviously work through the bigger task, but they still want you to engage with every little piece. And I think that's something that the Arlen games, especially Rorona, unfortunately suffers from, is it is very hard to engage with a bunch of the pieces. And I'm not 100%er either. It's more just, I remember when I reviewed it, there was that little bit of frustration of just being like, I wish I could have accomplished more.
Yeah. And again, and certainly I know that that is a big put off for a lot of people. I've heard that from a lot of people talking about the Arlen games where they, you know, they start playing it and the time limits just really turn them off. And I get that. I don't think it's quite as terrible as some people say. Like I don't remember ever being. It was only like late game in Rorona where and Totori where basically where you would have the biggest thing I remember having happen about that was just where you would get knocked out, where you would lose a battle in an enemy, like when you're on the other side of the map, and then it would send you like, you know, 15 days back to the to where you were supposed to go, and then it's like, oh no, I've lost like 2 weeks and now I need to go back to that place because I haven't gotten the, you know, the items that I
and
need.
And I have less time to deal with it.
That was the only time when it just like kill you.
I would say like saves coming in Rorona is your friend. Frequently saving is the only way, I think, in some cases, to have a little bit of experimentation, because if you don't, you kind of get stuck if you get defeated in any purpose. And Rorona, I mean, in terms of difficulty, it is also the hardest of the four.
Especially if you were playing the original PS3 version, which had no magic points, and they would take every time you used magic, it sucked your HP down.
Like, oh, why? God.
Why
I
did
forgot.
You think it was a good idea? And then they, you know, retconned it for proper Rorona re-release. Thank goodness.
And I need to play the Switch version again just to have it be a little bit easier.
Well, that's it. You know, I think when the PS3 versions of these games came out, there was still a little bit of roughness gameplay-wise that just, you had to be in the correct headspace to play them. Mm-hmm. You had to be willing to kind of flex your brain a little bit to go, okay, this did not work. Why did this not work? Okay, back to the drawing board. I got to kind of put this all together. And in that regard, I kind of love these versions of the Atelier games because they are like the ultimate spreadsheet game.
Yeah.
You get to the point where you're like, okay, if I move this here and this here, I could put this trait here and do this element here. And you just... you get into that zone, but it's also so easy to lose time doing that. And it's like, oh shit, I zoned out. My exams today. Oh crap. Okay. So I made a thing. Then they look at you like, you didn't do a good job. I'm like, shut up. I tried my hardest.
That was one thing that this series, especially these first three games, taught me was to not necessarily focus so much on perfection, because especially some of the later tasks where you had to either get like a high quality or a specific trait or a specific element on an item, and nothing I had would work, and I didn't have enough time to do what I needed to do, so I kind of just would put one together and it would try it, and I was trying to get a perfect score on all the different exams, and it just kind of barely passed.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, I need to be accepting of the lack of perfection, because I can't always do things perfect.
And in fairness to you, Kelly, Rorona's exactly the character you would expect to have that mentality. The, well, I made it, cookie. Did I do good? Whereas I would say Toto-chan is the one who's a little bit more of a perfectionist.
Yeah, and that's something that I struggle with as far as, like, being creative, is that I will, like, I draw and I paint in my spare time, and I will obsess over the little details and just can't have a hard time dealing with the fact that it's okay to just leave things the way they are and not, you know what I'm getting at, not obsess over it.
Yeah.
But that's what actually makes the Atelier game so special, especially... the first three. They are stories about young women who are learning about themselves. And that is freaking unheard of in a lot of JRPGs, in a lot of video games. I mean, you have Rorona, who is a little bit uncomfortable in her own skin, a little dippy, but she has a lot of sincerity and she cares about Astrid and she cares about the people in Arland. And it's hard not to love her because of that. You have Totori, who has a lot of anxiety, who doesn't know who she is. She knows she wants to be an adventurer and be like her mother, but she has no confidence in herself. And her story is all about building self-confidence, which is awesome. And then you have Meruru, who has a lot of confidence, but, you know, she wants to be seen beyond being the Princess of Arles. And I think of just those traits for these three heroines, and that's what makes them special to me, and that's why I love these games, is you can see yourself in these characters. You can see yourself in a way where it's reminding you that you are good enough, or you can build that confidence, or, you know, you are strong enough to make it through hard situations. Totori is my favorite game of the bunch, and that is because Totori's story, for me personally, hits the closest to home, especially as a person who doesn't have a mom anymore. I played it while my mom was still alive, admittedly, but the idea of you've worked so hard to build your confidence and, you know, you keep working at it, you keep trying your best, and you get to the end result, and spoilers, Todori's mom is dead, and it is awful, and it is such a heartbreaking moment in the story because she wanted to show her mother that she was successful and that she was succeeding and that she has become a great adventurer. So to find her mother's gravestone, it destroys her in that moment, but it doesn't, it gives her even more confidence as the story goes on. It's that little bit of like, you know what? It's okay. Mom's smiling down on me. I can finish the job. I can finish this. I can do this. And I wasn't a confident kid at all. Confidence took a long time for me. And when I played Totori for the first time, I saw myself in her. I saw that lack of confidence. I saw that fear of wanting to go beyond my hometown, but the desire of, I also need to leave to see the world. And how can you not connect with that? And I think that's what makes these games so special in a lot of ways, is these are just ordinary people. They don't have magic powers. You know, they use alchemy as a means to bring joy and kindness to the world. They want to help people. And kindness and helping others, like, that's a noble goal in itself.
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about these games. You know, the heroes, the stars of the game, they aren't the biggest, strongest people. It's essentially like the smartest people, or the people who certainly have figured out the ways to take their strengths and make it work for them.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's a unique kind of lead in a video game.
Well, and you root for them. That's that's totally the key thing.
Totally.
There is no unlikable heroine in Atelier because they all bring joy in different ways. Like, that's kind of one of the other unique elements to the series, is it is a genuinely wholesome series that has characters that are so lovable and so sincere. And it's hard to dislike a lot of the characters because they are just presenting the best versions of themselves, and they are trying to instill the best versions of the heroines. And again, that is such a unique thing to see. And it's also just, I'm going to point out the obvious, it is also unique to just see a totally female-fronted series.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the exception of Eska and Logi, all the games, and I'm excluding Iris and Monokemia in these cases, are all female-fronted. And that makes that series, like, it makes the series more special in that regard as well. Because it is the idea that little girls, anyone, truthfully, should be able to see themselves in these characters.
So you think the series is a very positive message for women?
Always, always. I've always believed that. And it's just because there is nothing like it. Like, can you think of other series that promote the same level of positivity, kindness, community, resourcefulness? There is no series like the Atelier series. The closest thing you might get is something like Harvest Moon or Story of Seasons, and that's a very different scenario because, I'm going to be a little shady here, in Harvest Moon, literally you're just handing people rocks and they love you, right? Whereas here, when you're helping people, especially helping non-NPCs, you're building your relationships with them and you're getting these sweet little stories that go with them. Like in Atelier Meruru, one of my favorite characters is King Geo. And King Geo's in all three of the games. And King Geo at one point is just like, I want to become a superhero. So he runs around Arles and Arland as the Masked G. And it's the stupidest thing in the world. But he is so lovable because he cares about Meruru in this case. It's Meruru who he's following, and he wants to see her success. But he also is doing it from the shadows like Batman because he can't let people know that he kind of left his post. Like, how do you not love that? You know, the grumpiest character in the Atelier series is Sturkenberg. And he scowls, he's frumpy, and yet Rorona makes him smile. Rorona makes him crack a smile because she has so much sincerity that she breaks his icy wall. That's why I got mad at the beginning of this podcast, why they don't kiss. Because they actually have genuine chemistry between the two of them. She brings goodness out of him in a way that he never thought was possible. How do you not love that? And I mean, when you get to Lulua, you see it further. You see how much he's in love with Rorona. You see how much He loves Lulua. You see Stark's transformation, that he has become the best version of himself at that point. And having that evolution, which makes this particular quartet unique, is even more important because everybody gets to grow and everybody gets to shine. That's amazing.
No, I agree. I never thought about these games in that light before. But most of why I liked playing them was just being able to mix stuff and make stuff.
Yes, alchemy. Yes, yes.
Well, alchemy is one of the best parts of it. It's so easy to get lost in, and it's fun to just see what you can make.
It's so much fun to like experiment and try and come up with like new ways to kind of like add weird traits that you can like take one thing, add a trait, and then add that into something else to bring that trait down and multiply it and mix it with something else and create this super bomb that you just chuck at the giant boss and it just dies.
Yeah, no, there's nothing better than like finding a way to cheese your way through certain things because it's always doable. There is always a way to cheese using alchemy. Cheese your way through a final boss, a special boss. Like, I love that. I truly do. I know with Lulua, I was getting really pissed off with the final boss. I remember just like, I keep dying, and I think it's because I'm not getting fast enough turns. So, of course, I'm like, I started reading online. I'm like, okay, how do I cheese this fucking boss?
And sure, there's a way. Sure,
there was a way. There was absolutely a way, and I killed him in two turns.
Oh, dang!
Yep. Mind you, he had killed, like, two of my characters at that point. So it was like, okay, if I don't kill him within, like, 2 to 3 turns, he's going to use that special move that will totally wipe me out. The other joke of, like, this series, too, is that levels kind of don't matter. Because if you're very good at manipulating alchemy, you can do a lot of things and be very low level. And I know I learned that one when I was playing Meruru a couple. Like, just I would find a way to cheese my way through a situation. I remember when I reviewed it and I was like, oh man, like, I feel like I should have been higher level. And then, you know, years later when people put out guides, it's like, oh yeah, no, I was not that level. I did not have this best armor or anything like that.
But you can manipulate turn order. You can use all kinds of like special items and pull off all kinds of stuff. It's neat.
It really is. And I mean, you know, when they started like with Lulua, if I'm not mistaken, that's the one that had a little bit of like you could combo a little bit where it was just like you could swap people in and out.
You had the back row. Yep.
The back row. And like, that's clever. That is a great way of taking something old and making it new. Especially because, like, at that point, they'd already made, like, all the desk games. You know, Sophie was coming. Was Sophie out? Sophie 2, I think, was the one I'm thinking of. And again, the battle systems in the Atelier games have the right level of simplicity with the best amount of flash. And I love that.
Nope, I agree.
All right, so where do we go from here?
So we had kind of touched a little bit about the main gameplay thing about the first two games in the series, and then Meruru kind of throws in the town building mechanic.
Yes, which was so fun.
Ooh.
You know,
Meruru definitely had the best mechanics of the first three.
Yes. Yeah.
I love me some town building. I will spend more time on town building than I will on games themselves, see Ni No Kuni 2. And the way Meruru combined the town building and the alchemy was just chef's kiss.
Oh god, yeah. No, that was the best part of Meruru. Like, if I was to kind of rank them on different things, it'd be like, the best gameplay for all of them, Meruru, hands down, because of the town elements. Even just the battle system Meruru was pretty top-notch, too. But it's like, if I look at, like, what my favorite story is, well, that's Tochiri. Tochiri has the best story, hands down. And then it's like, if I look at, like, the best cast, well, hilariously, that's Rorona. And again, they all have things about them that are just fantastic. But adding that town element, especially because it becomes so much more refined when you play Nelki, which Nelki is a bad game.
I've heard horrible things about Nelki.
But the town part, the town sim part, is not actually the bad part. It definitely was borrowing from what Meruru was trying to do. It's just Meruru did it better. Like, you got bonuses for things that you built. And just in general, like, there was something incredibly satisfying about building the different things in the town sim part. Like, just the moment you construct something, it was just like, oh my god, my town's getting bigger. This looks great. This looks amazing. Look at my statue of me. Because, of course, she has a statue of herself.
The sheer satisfaction of seeing that population roll in.
Yep.
When you would build stuff was just godly.
That's it. Like, and again, like, just the dopamine hits that you get from it, where it's just, as you're getting more people and you're building more things, like, it's hype. Like, you just want to keep doing it. And, like, that was a smart gimmick to add to this series. So, yeah.
Do you wish that they could bring it back in a better game?
I don't know. I don't know, because Meruru is honestly the perfect character to do it with, because she is a crown princess and because she can kind of make those decisions. I don't know if any of the other games would have benefited from it. And again, Nelki exists. Nelki had good ideas and then just had this really bland approach to a lot of it. And it's almost like if they're going to do it again, they've got to come at it from an angle where, again, it's giving you that level of satisfaction. It's got to give you the dopamine hit. And I don't know if that is possible at this moment, is what I'm going to say.
So we're probably never going to have an official Nelki podcast because that one was so bad. But, well, one, wasn't that supposed to be kind of a best of?
Well, it is. It was an anniversary game. Yeah. It was an anniversary game that brought all the characters from all the games together. And that part was great, especially if you didn't know certain characters, especially for us in the West. You know, we didn't have access to Judy and Violette and some of the other ones, Anise. So having exposure to those characters, even Marie, actually, you know, you get exposure to those characters and you see why they're so beloved. But it is one of those things where when that game came out, it didn't feel like an anniversary. It felt like an anniversary in the sense that all those characters were there, but gameplay-wise didn't do anything to make it feel like it was a special anniversary. Like, it just didn't. Like, the gameplay was bland and bad, and my god, the combat system was just walking in one direction. And it sucked. Absolutely sucked. And it kind of wasted the potential that came with having all those characters there.
I also heard it was buggy as hell too, Josh.
Yeah, I remember having some issues, but I think Josh actually had worse issues than I did.
Yeah, I remember having multiple crashes on the Switch version of that.
And see, yeah, I think I played it on PS4. So, as always, you play it on Switch, you might get some unique bugs, apparently.
Koei Tecmo and Switch did not go well together.
I don't think they still go well together. But yeah, I mean, I think my biggest surprise with this series actually was the existence of Lulua. And I think it's because, and Matt can attest to the scenario, that was the year we had 3 Atelier games. I reviewed Nelki and I went, fuck this series. If this is what it's becoming, I want nothing to do with it.
To play Lulua.
I almost broke up with the series. And I was very open about it, like, with both the staff chats. I wrote editorials about my breakup. And I remember, and we'll talk about it when we talk about Ryza, I had a hard time wanting to come back because that is how bad Nelki broke me. How bad the mysterious sub-series broke me, because I was so miserable playing those games. And I think my brain wanted the charm of the Arlen series. And it's hard to go back to that, because when you see how the newer sub-series kind of are their own things, there are certain elements that are missing. And again, I play Atelier games because I want cute girls being cute and being sincere and wholesome. And when you get to the mysterious sub-series, you get some of that, but you get also some really bad gameplay choices. And this series, for what it's worth, I mean, they do a lot of experimentation, which is great. What makes Lulua special is the fact that it does a great job of gameplay-wise fitting into the Arlen series, but still also, like, providing a full refresh on the alchemy system, providing a nice refresh to the battle system, and it still has familiarity. And I think that's key. I think when they decided to make Lulua, it's like, we still have to make this familiar to people. And it's a story that we actually, when you think about it, we didn't need. But I'm very grateful it exists, because it is a wonderful story. And Lulua fits exactly what I talked about earlier in terms of being the perfect kind of Atelier heroine. Again, she wants to build her confidence in alchemy. She wants to show her mother that she's good at it and that she can make a career out of it. And how do you not love somebody who likes to spy on everybody by hiding behind barrels and thinking she's totally clever about it, and she's absolutely not? Like, how do you not love that kid? She is a delight. And her cast is wonderful. Like, you get Gio's nephew, Oriel, and oh my god, he is a little bitch bot, and I love him. Just everything with him is a hissy fit. Everything. Oh my god, Lulua, you're so annoying. And she's just like, yeah, but I'm better than you. I can make you things, but you need to be nice to me. And he's just like, I don't want to be nice to you. And she's like, you have to be nice to me, or else I won't do stuff for you. And it's just the banter between the two. And like, I kind of shipped those two, I'm not going to lie. I just thought they were so cute as a possible couple. This series really doesn't like giving me couples. Stupid series. Why you hurt me?
I mean, I understand your frustration, but at the same time, there is something to be said about platonic friendships.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that is something I will say this series does well. Like, there is a lot of platonic friendship. Like, I love... Josh, what is Totori's best friend's name?
Oh, geez.
The rich girl.
Cordelia?
Cordelia, yeah. Like, they are so cute as friends, and they don't look like they would be friends at all. But Cordy's very good about trying to build Totori's confidence. And you know what? That's a great friend! Like, we need more of that shit!
I agree. There's nothing I love quite like a beautiful friendship when characters are just besties together.
That was one of the towns I drove past in Arkansas this week.
Besties?
Friendship.
Oh, friendship.
Friendship. I took a picture of the board on the interstate. I was like, there we go. I found it. The answer to all your JRPG getting stuck on the final bosses. Right there.
Friendship is magic.
Friendship is magic in these games too. I mean, that's
it
works so well.
A little bit of my history with the series is that I loved the Arwen trilogy, but with it being an annual release for 3 years straight, by the time the Dusk series started, I was kind of burned out. And then I sort of I tried to come back for Soapy, and everything that you guys said happened. I got way too bogged because there was no time limit. And at first I was like, this is great, Atelier with no time limit. I'm going to do all the things. And then because I tried to do all the things, I burned out the game and never finished it. Mm-hmm. And ended up not going to the other two mysterious games because I was told that they sucked.
You do. Please don't. Furious is one of the worst things I've ever played, amount of hate I got for my review, because people were like, well, you know, you didn't play the second half. I said, I barely got through the first half. Leave me the fuck alone. I shouldn't have to play 40 hours to then play another 40 hours. If the first 40 hours sucked, why am I playing the second 40 hours?
Whatever you do, don't play Furious on the Vita. Oh, God, that was terrible. So bad. So buggy.
No, and one day I'm sure we'll do a backtrack with the mysterious games, but they are an interesting bunch. And, I mean, Sophie got a sequel, much like Lulua. We didn't need it, but it was good. It fixed everything I didn't like about Sophie 1. But, yeah, I don't know. Lulua for me was just such a pleasant surprise, and I'm truly glad that I did go back to it, even after my hard Atelier burnout, because I felt a lot of happiness just playing it. And that's the thing. These games make you feel happy.
They're such cozy games. I mean, they're so fantastic.
They are. I mean, that term has gotten slinged around so much lately, but it definitely fits for this.
Absolutely.
I think the Arlen ones are in a way that even the Dusk and the other ones aren't. There's just something that's like bright and happy about Arlen that just makes you happy while you're playing it.
I think the Dusk games have the issue of there is an inherent like bigger power that you kind of have
to, that they don't completely pay off, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, whereas like again, it is more character focused in Arlen in a way that I'd argue the Dusk games are more story focused.
Yeah.
Like a bigger, like there's an overarching thing that characters are dealing with, especially with Escan Laji.
Yeah.
I think it is the best one of the three. And it's just because, you know, their world is basically turning into nothingness. There's no water. Water is a hard thing to find. And, you know, there is that almost apocalyptic dread with the idea that, again, because it's a climate disaster, if I'm remembering it correctly.
Yes. Yeah.
And yeah, like there is that little bit of hardship and that little bit of sadness, which Aisha also has, and so does Shally. Sadness is an integral part of the Dusk games in a way that sadness is different in the Arlen games. Like, I'd argue Totori is probably the saddest of the four.
Oh, certainly.
But Totori's main message, much like the other three games, is there is hope. All of the games have hope. And that's, I think, very important to kind of remember when you're playing them is, you know, they are wholesome and sweet, but as the games change and grow as a series, there are tougher topics in them. There are disaster. There is people struggling. There are people trying to find community. And I think that's where it differs a lot. And I think that's where one of my sadnesses with the series is that I like character-focused games. I love story-focused games. But I have to love the story enough to be invested. I mean, that's where the Mysterious series lost me completely, because just I didn't care. I didn't have a reason to care. Whereas, like, when I play the Arlen games, like, Roro, Toto, Ruru, and Lulu, like, they're my homegirls. And I connect with them, and I want to know what's happening in their lives. And I felt like I was just kind of hanging out with friends, right? Which I think is really important when you're looking at this series, because, again, if we're looking at the idea of this is a series that started out as just cute girls being cute girls and is now transformed into something bigger, the payoff has to be there. And I think with some of the later games, it's not there. But Lulu is great. I don't even know where I was going anymore. Sorry, guys.
I definitely need to pick up, I have it obviously, but I need to play it at some point.
I think you'd love it, Kelly. Like, there is such a sincerity in Atelier Lulua that, especially having not played the Arlen games in so long, coming back to that world felt like nothing had changed, and it felt so familiar. And, you know, that time that I spent playing Lulua, it just reminded me of why I love the series. And having that distance and then coming back, and you're just seeing how genuinely funny the characters are, or how fun the alchemy system is, and how easy it is to get lost. The endings were kind of weird in Lulua, which I enjoyed. You know, there's something about it that, even without the time limit, there is so much interesting things that are happening. Like, the gimmick in Lulua, I think, is one of the best, which is the alchemy riddle. The alchemy riddle is you go to different destinations, you make different items, and it fills in your book. And you get different clues to figure out how you're supposed to make new recipes and whatnot. And it is such a good hook.
Because, oh, I loved that. The Alchemyrical book, or what is it?
Yes, the alchemy riddle. It was fantastic.
Alchemy riddle, that's it.
It sounds a little bit like what Sophie tried to do.
Yeah, and I think Lulua did it better. Just because there is that element of it's not handing you the answer. Like, it genuinely does want you to think. And half the time, you know what? When you're just exploring in Lulua, you accidentally fall into different things with the alchemy riddle. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, all of a sudden, be like, hey, this thing got crossed out. You might want to go check your alchemy riddle. And you'll go back to, like, the traveling alchemy wagon. And you'll realize, like, oh, you knocked out a bunch of things just by attacking a certain enemy or gathering a certain item or just going to a landmark. And you want to complete it. Like, that's the thing. And I did. I absolutely got the achievement for getting every single recipe in the alchemy riddle because I was obsessed. Like, I wanted to do it.
And you had all the time.
And I had all the time to do it. And that is a benefit to that one. I'm generally, my husband says I'm a bit of an achievement whore. I'm not one of those people who, like, actively seeks platinums. I'm not that person. But if I really like something, I will try to get as many achievements as I can.
I'm the same way, mainly because I think if achievements are done well, that's a nice little checklist for seeing everything that you want to see.
Yes.
And I was going to we'll get into this a lot more in 2 weeks when we talk about the first Ryza game, but I like it. It sounds like the alchemy riddle is like what Ryza was trying to do, where you had character tasks that kind of encouraged you to try out different things with different characters, like filling out monster entries for the kid with glasses or what have you.
Oh, and Tao. I love Tao. He's the sweetest little nerdlinger.
And to me, any game that encourages you to try everything in a game is very well designed to me.
Absolutely.
So I will have to put Lulua in my backlog or my queue, as it were. So all the versions that are on Switch right now, I think Switch and PS4 are the Plus versions.
Yes.
What did they do with the Plus versions that improved them?
There wasn't that much, other than Rorona, where they actually went back and reworked the battle system to add MP.
And the graphics.
Updated the graphics. There weren't a lot of changes, I think, between Totori and Meruru in the Plus versions, right? Those are basically just taken from the Vita versions, which also then didn't really add much.
Aside from maybe some new playable characters,
yeah, they're new playable characters. There's swimsuit that you can put the characters in, that kind of stuff. But otherwise, of course, you got to have that.
I have swimsuits, Kelly.
And I, even though there are some girls with big boobs, I do appreciate that a lot of the characters in this series aren't very sexualized, because that is something that kind of gets on my nerves with quote-unquote girl games like this.
I feel like actually, like, in recent years, I think Ryza is actually the worst offender for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even not that bad, I would say.
No, she just has thunder thighs.
She has thunder thighs and booty shorts. And you just kind of look at it and you're like, well, you know what? Fine. I like me a woman with booty shorts. This is fine. So that's kind of it. Right? Like, I don't remember. Oh, God, no. There is also Boobylicious in Ryza. The, what's her name? I can't remember her name, but she has massive jugs.
We'll have to look it up and get back.
And she's purple-haired. I can picture her. Because every time she came on the screen, Scott was just like, hello, nurse. And I was like, I know, right?
And don't get me wrong, listeners, I'm not a no fun, no boobs feminist in that way. I get a little tired of it sometimes.
Okay, most of the time it's played for laughs.
Yeah, I like it more when it's played for laughs than crap like what VanillaWare pulls, as much as I love their games.
You mean Sorceress and Dragon's Crown?
Yeah.
Or the Amazon, who, like, I swear her thighs, you could probably fry 2 eggs on the back of them.
Yeah.
She has flat top thighs, which make absolutely no sense.
Yeah, that kind of stuff kind of gets on my nerves.
I think that's fair.
But when it's played for laughs, and I always love a good hot spring scene in any anime, and or Tales game, or and Trails game.
This series likes the hot springs. One of Meruru's endings is a hot springs ending.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's very hard to get. I remember talking about it with my friend Becky, and that's the one she got by accident. She's like, I got a hot springs ending. And I mean, there's also a hot springs ending in Lalua, too, with the volcano.
Ooh.
Yeah, because the endings in these games were very opaque, at least in the original three.
Yes.
So it depended on, like, what characters you did the most things for would raise the friendship level, and that would affect, like, what endings you would get with them.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, Lalua, I think, was actually the easiest for that. Because Lalua also was interesting in that you could get multiple endings in one playthrough. So if you finished your different relationships with people, because I got everybody except one, and it was the pirate guy. He was the one I completely ignored because I don't care. And I got everybody else's endings. But usually you only get one ending in the other ones, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I think it was a story in one character or something like that.
Yeah, something like, oh, you and Cordelia, like, had a great time together. You know, here's that ending, plus here's, you know, so-and-so's ending for, like, them being a good alchemist.
Yeah.
The bad endings usually just consisted of, you failed your deadline! How dare you!
We're taking away your atelier.
Yeah, and then your normal ending was just, like, wholesome and sweet, because it was like, and then, you know, days just went on and things were okay.
Totori is the only one that I ever played through multiple times because I had to get the true ending with that one, mainly because I had to see what was beyond the mysterious sea.
Yeah.
And it took 3 tries through the game to get through to the true ending with, you know, the scene that made you bawl.
Yeah, Totori, Totori was a little mean at times, I found. Like, I don't think I ever got the true... No, I did get the true ending. But it... Yeah, no, it took a lot of effort. And you just kind of go, okay, that was a lot of work.
There's some tough boss battles in that one. You have to actually build a ship to sail across the city. Well, the hot air
balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to build like quite a few vehicles in Totori. Like, I actually... The bit with the hot air balloon, I loved. Like, just the first initial, like, you built your hot air balloon, and just, like, the joy on everybody's faces as they go for a hot air balloon ride. And you're just like, oh, you guys are so cute. Everyone's so stinking cute.
I can only think about how easy life would be if you could just conjure up a vehicle.
I know, right? Make it so much easier. But yeah, I know, if I'm not mistaken, Totori also had, like, I think more bad endings than some of the other ones did, too. But maybe I'm wrong on that one. I can't remember.
Totori was the highest stakes of the three games. I mean, you know.
Yes. Yeah, and that would make sense. Also, Chim is adorable. I forgot to mention him. I like the Chims.
I appreciated... in the later game, seeing the teddy bear, and I was like, I know who that is.
Yep.
You're going to get Pamela later.
Oh, Pamela. She is a delight. She is so funny. I mean, I love in Lalua, she basically gets told that her store is being foreclosed on, and then she's like, but also no one can see me, so how can it be foreclosed on? And then you have to, like, help her pay her bills and stuff like that. And you're just like, Pamela, how? She's like,
I'm a ghost. What do you want?
Well, that's it. But I also love that, like, she's so upset about the idea of foreclosure. It's like, you're already dead, Pamela. Why does foreclosure matter?
I don't think the game ever says how she died, does it?
I don't. Think it does.
I don't think so.
And I don't know, maybe that's one of those things that's funnier not knowing.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm just going to quickly read. I don't think it ever says how she died. Oh, yeah, no. So it is, she literally can't recall the circumstances of her death. And that's okay. In every game. In every game, she can't remember how she died. So there you go.
And she shows up beyond the Arwen trilogy, doesn't
she? Well, she originally is from Atelier Judy.
Oh, okay.
Because she was in Atelier Irish. She was in the Mana games. And then, like, her most recent appearance, if I'm not mistaken, was Atelier Ryza 2. So she's in most of them.
Okay.
And she's in it just in different ways. Like, in Ryza 1, she's not quite the Pamela that we come to love, being a shopkeeper and stuff like that. Like, she is a pirate NPC.
Oh, yeah, I remember her.
There's
now,
like, a quest for her with the mysterious adventurer. And you interact with her at the port. And it's the same with in Ryza 2. It's more of an Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, in some of the other ones, she just straight up is a part of it. You know, whether it's running, you know, she's a nun collecting donations versus just being a shopkeeper. Heck, Pamela's in Trinity Universe, which I actually didn't know. So there you go.
That is funny.
Yeah, she's a shopkeeper in the Arlen games, like all three of them.
I tried playing that and couldn't really get into it. Trinity Universe, I mean.
I forgot it existed.
Yeah, so did I. Well, I think we've covered all the games. As far as pricing goes, they're on the Switch store. I want to say they're still $60.
Give or take.
They're all on Steam now, so they'll go on sale occasionally.
The last time I saw, or when I purchased them, they were on sale for it's $40. They were on sale for $20 each, so I ended up getting the three trilogies. Arlen, Dusk, and Mysterious. I probably should have saved my money for Mysterious, but I at some point I wanted to complete that. Sorry, I'm distracted by puppy barking.
Sorry. Oh, she is cool. Upset.
But,
because I'm not in bed right now.
Gotcha. I say pick them up either on Steam or on the Switch, though your mileage may vary on Switch, because I've heard bad things about Gust games running well.
Yeah.
We might get to that in the next section.
Like I've said, I still have my three collector's editions for the PS3 for these, because NIS put them out way back when. And that was back when I bought everything that NIS published. And then a thing called Neptunia happened, and that's ugh, that tradition stopped.
Yeah, I remember the Now with Totori had the weird Vita release where it like shadow dropped one day with absolutely no warning.
Yep.
And people were theorizing, like, was this like some weird contractual thing or something? I think that was when it changed over from NIS to Koei Tecmo. And there was just like some weird PR snafu, and they just did no PR for it. They just dropped it on the Sony store one week with no warning.
And I'm going to correct myself from earlier. Totori's best friend is Mimi.
Ah.
Cordelia's Verona's.
Verona's, yeah. Getting them confused.
Because I was like, no, different rich girl. And it's like, right, Mimi, also really rich. Kind of mean sometimes. So there we go.
Yeah, there are so many characters in this series. It doesn't surprise me that we get them confused.
Yeah, a lot of them are the same characters of the same character tropes.
Pretty much. But unless we have anything else to add, I think we are ready to move on to the roundtable.
Yay!
We'll be right back with our favorites, our memories, a little bit more. RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable for the Atelier Rorona or Arland Quartet. Yes, I got the term right. Quartet. I almost said trilogy again, and I had to
you
say myself.
You got it, Kelly!
It took all podcast four tries. Got there.
Tony, but that last game was just off my radar. It came out so late compared to the others.
All good. But, you did great.
But, that being said, what was your favorite and or funniest moment from any game in the series?
I don't know if it's my favorite moment. The moment that still sticks in my mind is that fight against the Flouse Trout in Totori. And you're fighting that evil, you know, squid monster. And when you finally beat it, it gives you that little, like it does in big moments in the game where it's just like a nicely drawn scene. And then it's just all the characters covered in, you know, dead bits of tentacle. And I'm like, I know what you're doing there, game. I know what you're hinting at.
And Josh, that comes back in Lulua.
Oh, no.
Like, there is a CG, and it's people, like, being strung up with tentacles because they're fighting the Sea King. It's just like, oh, dear. And Totori's like, not again.
Nice.
For me, it was the ending of Totori where you find your mom's grave.
Yes.
That one was definitely impactful, mainly because, like I said, it took me 3 playthroughs of the game to get to that, and then when you get to it, and she's just devastated, it kind of hit a little bit close to home.
Oh, it hurts. Especially because Totori's so lovable. Like, you spend a lot of the game being like, I want this girl to succeed, I want this girl to succeed, and then the game throws that twist at you, and you're like, oh, you knifed me. Ow.
I think what I love about that so much is that, like, you know, it is heartfelt, it is earned, you feel gutted, but then Totori still manages to pick herself up and move on. And I love that part of the game, you know, like it doesn't devastate her.
It's such a real response.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everybody has that response when they come face to face with death, but some of us figure it out. Some of us figure out that we got to keep going. We're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Did
you have one?
So mine actually is also from Totori. It is when you make the hot air balloon. That is one of my favorite scenes, just because it's that moment of just the excitement of you get to go to these new lands, and Totori's like, I can't believe, like, I made a hot air balloon with alchemy. And just, it's her genuine excitement in the moment. And then, of course, you build the hot air balloon, you go to the lands, you start to learn about mom, and it takes you towards, you know, the true ending, and then it hurts. but I have lots of favorite moments. I mean, another one I also like is just, again, anytime Geo appeared as the Masked G. I always loved it.
Yeah, Geo's a pretty cool character.
Geo's great. He's kind of a dope, and I love him.
I don't think you said yours, Matt.
Yes. I haven't, no. I picked it from Lulua, because that's the only one I played. But I got one of the, I guess it was bad endings. I mean, I thought it was just fine. I'll talk about it later, too, how I was kind of in a time crunch here to finish this. But there was, at one point, you have a character, Stia, and she's... because there was one in Essien Laagi, so maybe this is a series staple. She was a robot girl. Don't know how that often that happens in
Atelier worlds. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, she wasn't as impactful as maybe some of the other characters were in the game. So getting near the end of the game, you know, part of the problem is the Fels Galaxian place. Something's going wrong there. It's a big... tower in the middle of the world that's got all this technology in it, and, you know, oh man, like, we got to save the Fels Galaxian and solve the problems. And I think when you found her in the game, she's like standing outside because she's been locked outside, and eventually you find out that she's like the guardian of the Fels Galaxian, and that's why she was created, to keep it running and everything. And one part near the end of the game, she's just kind of like, listen, you know, one way to fix this whole thing, I can just go lock myself in the control room. I'm immortal. That's what I'm supposed to be doing anyway. And I was like, okay. And I got a lovely ending. It was the end. And I was like, there we go. I just saved the world. I'm good. Okay. Saw the credits. I kept thinking I'd come back to it. And no, I didn't. Like, I should, but that game's gone. And I don't play much on the PS4 anymore. So, but I just thought it was like, Okay, but... you want to take one for the team? Thanks a lot. Like, I mean, there's a lot of JRPGs at a noble sacrifice at the right time. Make it was
and the
okay.
game let
I was okay
you.
With it. And yeah, the game, let,
game
me.
Let you.
Yeah.
I was going to say
a that's a valid way to end it.
That's a very near ending to me.
Quite.
I mean, it may have been like one chapter off the final ending. So, I mean, I didn't feel too bad dipping out at that point.
When you're reviewing games and you've got a chance to like cut a few hours off, sometimes you take it.
Yep. And that was exactly what was going on. I'll tell my story, though, in a little bit. We can move on to the next question.
Yeah. So what are you guys' favorite characters?
Totori.
Totori for the main character. If I had to pick like one of the side characters, it's probably Hegel. I liked Hegel. Got to stick with the bald guys.
Bald classic. You know, thinking of a secondary character, I'd say my favorite secondary character, it's a toss-up between Geo and Sterk. I've always been like Sterk stan. I also love Melvia. She's from Totori. She's like the, you know, barbarian babe. I liked her too.
There are a lot of good secondary characters in the
yes,
game.
Yes, there is.
They're entertaining.
I'm Team Sterkenberg.
Right answer.
As far as main characters, I'd say Maruru. She's got a lot of heart.
She's got a lot of heart and spunk.
That's exactly what I was about to say. A lot of spunk.
She's the sassy one of the three.
I'm going to default to Lulua again here.
Yeah. so that, what's your favorite?
I know. I got a pool. I got a small pool.
In the quadrilogy.
Master's like, Lulua.
Lulua! Because I played it.
Totori.
Definitely Totori. Oh, we got a Maruru fan.
I like town building.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it probably does have the best mechanics, certainly, of the first three. Yeah. Story kind of does it for me on Totori, but the mechanics are definitely better in Maruru.
So I have a question. Do I need to play those three games in any semblance of order?
You don't have to. You
especially
know, like
since
you probably
played Lulua.
I was gonna say. I mean, I'm already in the epilogue.
Okay.
So
depending on what you care about, I would say do Maruru.
That I was gonna say. What I'm hearing here, because I do love some town building, is play that, then play Totori because y'all have a lot of great
Totori's
memories.
Totori's best
of that
story.
One. Yep. Okay. And then you know, if I get around to playing all four, you know, then I can play Rorona.
Correct.
That's it. Yeah.
There we go. Perfect.
Also, sorry if you guys can hear the other dog. He is upset that Daddy ditched him. Anyways.
How dare he? You don't ditch the puppy.
That's Brew.
Oh.
The old man.
I say having baby-gated my basement so that he won't come down here and pee because he does that when I'm not paying attention to him.
Uh-huh.
That being said, what about a final question for the night? What were your memories while you was playing this any game in the trilogy?
Quartet.
I did it.
All right, I'll start since I just hinted at it earlier. So, I hadn't played, Cal, just like you, although it was, you know, then 10 years plus that, I hadn't played any game in the Atelier series except for the Iris Eternal Mana one. From what I understand, that was not like all these other games. It felt just very JRPG with, you know, an item creation tool to it, which back in PS2 days, that's exactly what I wanted. It was great. But when I was a wee youngin' back on RP Gamer, I just started, I think, 2018, because, yeah, this came out 2019. So 2018, I joined, and after I got about 6, 8, 9, maybe even reviews under my belt, pretty quickly. That next summer, I just got a Nintendo Switch. I was 2 years late to the Nintendo Switch game. I was still having a ton of fun with my Vita and 3DS. So I was like, oh, finally get the Switch. And right away, I was like, oh, Octopath Traveler's got to be my first game there. And I remember, like, Josh, you and I talked about it, that no one had reviewed it the year before because everybody started it. It was the most played game. But nobody really saw it through to the end. And even the people that did were like, I don't know what to really, I liked a lot of it, but I don't know how to write a review of that game. So I was like, yeah, what the hell? You know, Alex had been giving me games and I was like, oh, I'll write a review of something that I'm playing here. Cause I know we don't have it. So I was writing Octopath Traveler and then it pops up that, hey, we got an Atelier Lulua. Sam is burnt out on this Nelky Broker. anybody want it? And I'm like, eh, you know, I'm just kind of tinkering around with Octopath Traveler on the side. I'll do it. I got a few weeks left here at the beginning of the summer. I got plenty of time before I take off on my normal, like, 4-week summer vacation all June. And then, so I was like, yeah, I'll take it. And then I get a message from Pascal, and he's like, hey, this is actually a physical copy for PS4, not a review code. I'll need to mail it to you. And I'm like starting to look at my watch. I'm like, okay, I leave in 3 weeks. That's good. And then it took like a week for him to package it up and get it to me. I'm like, oh boy, hope this isn't like a 40, 50 hour game, because I'm not lugging my PS4 up to the vacation house. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of time. I put a lot of hours into it every day, was just having fun with it. And then, yeah, it was like, oh crap, like I need to roll credits on this in like 2 days. And I got that. And that was it. I mean, I was having fun. I was spending too much time doing all the side quests, filling in both sides of the book, because all the options, what is it? The story stuff's on the left, right, Sam? And all the optionals on the right. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, it made my brain feel good to get the left and the right and check things off. And then suddenly it was like, oh, crap. Like, we pull out of here for 26 days in like 48 hours. I need to like power through. And I think it was, yeah, like the second to last chapter when I got that option for Stia to take the hit and just sit there. I'm like, ah, look at that. I rolled credits. I can write a review now. So that is my big memory, like trying to play Octopath Traveler and like having to set that aside for a little bit. I actually went back and looked. I wrote the Octopath Traveler review before I wrote the Lulua one, but I know I did both of those while on vacation. But it was pretty funny. I mean, there was a very distinct reason why I took that way out. So
nope, that's fair.
Thank you for your sacrifice. I'm sure I would have done very well in the last chapter in the final boss.
No,
I was taking out some optional things along the way just fine, because I, like you said, I alchemized very well and had fun effects on all things.
Yep, best time ever.
Yep.
I don't have big specific memories about any game in particular, but I do remember that my husband sort of had a tradition of getting me the couple of collector's editions for Maruru and Totori for Christmas 2 years in a row. And then the series switched over to Koei Tecmo, and they weren't really, I don't think they were really doing collector's editions.
Not really.
Yeah, at least not like conventional ones like at GameStops or what have you. So, but he still kind of kept up the tradition all the way through the Dusk ones, and I felt bad for not playing those, not getting around to them. But I would spend Christmas morning booting up a new Atelier game for a couple of years.
Awesome.
I also have a Christmas memory. So I remember I got a PS3, and when I first got a PS3, I spent a bunch of time, you know, like, as you sometimes do, like, poke around, like, look for RPGs and stash them, you know, stash stuff on your Amazon wish list, you know, to keep an eye on it, just in case it goes on sale, you know, so I don't forget about it. So this was one of the first games, like, when I got a PS3, I just, like, stashed it on my Amazon wish list and promptly forgot about Atelier Verona. I knew nothing about this game or the series other than just like, it's an RPG, it's on the PS3. There aren't that many RPGs at the early in the early days of the PS3. Like, yeah, we'll stick this on the wish list. Maybe I'll get it, maybe I won't. And promptly forgot about it. And then, you know, months later, Christmas rolls around, you're opening presents around the tree with the family, and open up presents, and that was one of the gifts I got, was Atelier Verona. And then everyone, you know, the whole family's asking me, like, what is this game we got you? And I'm like, I have no freaking clue. It's got a cutesy looking girl on the front. It's an RPG. I know nothing else about it. But thankfully, it was really good, and I really enjoyed it.
It's cool. Love it. So I guess the memory I'm going to talk about is, in 2018, I had the wonderful opportunity to go to Tokyo Game Show on behalf of RP Gamer. And that was the year they were showing off Nelki. And let's just say I had a lot of fun scouring, like, there was a giant, like, store inside of Tokyo Game Show. And Sam's like, ooh, dealer's room. Like, let's go have a look around. So one, had I been on the Kiwami podcast, I would have explained this particular story, which is, there was a guy at the Sega booth who was humming and hawing about buying the last Majima figure. Dipshit put it down, and I immediately swiped it from him, snuck around him, and then bought it. And Scott's just like, you were going to stab a bitch if he actually had, like, taken it, which I absolutely would have. So that is how I have a Majima figure. But on the same trip, Tecmo Koei had a really cute booth of just all kinds of their popular titles, and then, of course, all the Gust-branded stuff. So I have Tsum-tsums of Maruru and Totori, and they are the cutest thing in the whole world. But I also have, because I have a little atelier shelf on in my office, I went to Nakano Broadway with my friend Kim, who used to work for Game Informer. We walked Nakano Broadway, and in one of the used stores was this beautiful Totori statue. And she was like, you have to take that home. Like, this is a sign. She is your favorite character from this series. And I kind of, again, I hummed and I hawed, and I was like, I don't know if I have enough luggage space because my husband bought, like, 6 Gundams. Right? And Scott's just like, well, we're just going to go buy extra luggage anyway. So he's like, go get your Totori. And I think she was less than $30.
Oh, nice. Canadian.
So she's been with me ever since. I take really good care of her, and she makes me smile. When I look at her, it's just one of those, like, she's a character I relate to, and I feel a lot of good feelings. It reminds me of my trip. It reminds me why I love Totori. My copy of Totori, my physical copy, came from our former editor-in-chief, Michael Cunningham, as a present. So it's never leaving my collection. I mean, not just because I generally don't get rid of a lot of things, but because it was very special to me. And the note that it came with, you know, just said, hey, a special game for a special person.
Oh,
yeah. So that's also why I kind of have an attachment to Totori.
I'm glad somebody else also knows the pain of having to buy extra luggage on vacation to carry shit back.
We had to buy extra luggage to make sure that Gundams could return back to Canada.
See, last time we went to Japan, it was all the manga that my husband bought. This time around, it was because I, even though I tried to keep them somewhat reasonably sized, I did buy a fuck ton of plushies.
Yay, plushies.
including a very, very large Esper plushie that is soft and cuddly and is my friend.
Awesome. That is great. All right. I'm going to head off.
Okey-dokey.
I'm starting to fall asleep. Thank you guys again for having me.
No problem.
Oh, thanks for being here.
We missed you last week very much.
I missed it. I was very sad.
But it wasn't your fault. It was
your... It was my internet. But I'm happy I'm here this time. So thank you again, as always, for having me.
No problem. And we'll have you next week for
Ryza.
Ryza 1.
Not Ryza. No.
No.
Yep.
Sorry, there's so many games in this series. Oh, gosh, yeah. My brain was trying to autocorrect. You made Rorona, right? No, the other R1. Ryza. Ryza.
Thighs. Think thighs, Kelly.
they got away from the double, you know, Totori, Lulu, Rorona, Meruru. You know, you don't get the double sound every time. They went real basic. Ryza.
Yeah. Ryza, and then made 3 of them, and we're
instead of 3 different syllables all being the same, they just made 3 games.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about the first one. I don't know if we're gonna get into the other two. We shall see, because I haven't played the other two. I think we're probably gonna try to have Chris on. I think both them, him and Sam, have played the other two, and
if I want to guess, I think Chris got deep into 2, but that was where he stopped. He was obsessed for a while, but I could be wrong.
I thought he played the whole trilogy.
I don't think so. I think he got distracted.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, let's be honest here. It is Chris. Yep. Mm. No, listen to y'all on RPG Cast. I'm like, I remember him loving the first and going back to the second because he loved the first. And I think that just burned him out. I remember his rants about, like, why don't I love this game more? It's the same game. I should love it more.
I mean, that's the one sucky thing about having consistent gameplay is that you know what you're getting, but you have the potential to burn out pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. If you're not up for, I mean, even these with shorter games, heck, I mean, it's like me with the Cold Steel games. Like, I really love them, but holy crap, I can't play 2 of those back to back.
No.
Nope.
You need a break.
Sometimes even. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that being
said. Talk about what we can talk about next time.
We will get there. That being said, thank you, Josh, for hanging out with us. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we thank Sam as she departed. Thank you, Matt, as always, for co-hosting and editing and being wonderful.
Of course.
And thank you, listener, for hanging out with us tonight. I forgot to say we're doing this because we wanted to call it Atelier April. A little bit of alliteration there.
We love our alliteration at RP Gamer.
That we do. So tune in a couple of weeks for Atelier Ryza. We shall catch you later and have a wonderful rest of your week.